Okay, welcome back, everybody. We're going to go on to investment entities now, and Sarah's going to say a few words and ask you some questions. This is post-ED stage now, so we've got all the comment letters. We will shortly start redeliberating. The objective is to try and get this done reasonably quickly. Some people, particularly in Canada, are holding up IFRS adoption for certain entities as a result of this. But there are a number of interesting questions that arise that we're seeking your input on. Sarah?
Okay, thank you, Steve. So I don't think this project has been discussed with the CMF before, so I thought it might be useful before I get into the specific questions to just spend a few minutes giving you an overview of the project itself and kind of why it came onto the board's agenda. So the investment entities project came up through the course of deliberations on the consolidation standard IFRS 10. When the IASB issued the exposure draft of IFRS 10, some respondents requested that an exception from consolidation be provided for entities such as mutual funds, private equity funds, venture capital funds, hedge funds, and other investment funds that pool funds from external investors and provide professional investment management services. So basically, for these funds, their sole purpose is investing. So preparers from these funds and users of these funds' financial statements argued that an exception to consolidation should be given for these entities because the fair value of these entities' investments is much more useful information than consolidated information. These preparers and users said this was because fair value reporting reflects how preparers manage and evaluate the performance of these funds and how investors make decisions regarding whether to buy, hold, or sell their investments in these funds. The respondents argued that consolidated information is not necessarily the most relevant or useful information because it combines the assets and liabilities of unrelated investments and does not give investors clear information about the value of their investment in these entities. So there's currently guidance in U.S. GAAP for these types of entities. They're called investment companies within U.S. GAAP. U.S. GAAP has provided an exception from consolidation for investment companies for many years. So this project did become a joint project with the FASB so that the boards could come up with the same definition of an investment entity and provide converged, consistent guidance for investment entities. As Steve said, in August, the IASB did publish an exposure draft investment entities, which gave guidance for investment entities. The ED provides a set of criteria that must be met for an entity to qualify as an investment entity, and it requires that investment entities must measure their interest in controlled investees at fair value rather than consolidating those investees. So the first questions that I wanted to ask the CMAC members were about kind of the general project itself. Whether there should be an exception from consolidation for investment entities, which entities you think should qualify as investment entities, and what you think the most important information is in the analysis of investment entities. So if you look at Agenda Paper 5B, there are a couple of tables on pages 2 and 3 of the paper that draw out the IASB's and the FASB's proposals. The first table illustrates that for the IASB, all investments of an investment entity must be measured at fair value, no matter how large the holding that the investment entity has in its investee. So whether you have a 5%, a 20%, or a 60% holding, every investment would be measured at fair value. The second table illustrates the differences between fair value measurement and consolidation in the financial statements. So, for example, if a private equity fund that qualified as an investment entity would have a controlling interest, like a 60% interest in a portfolio company, under the ED's proposals, the fair value of that investment would be included as part of the fair value of investments line item on the balance sheet. If it was consolidated, though, there would be information about that investment's assets and liabilities on the balance sheet, along with any non-controlling interest that would be present in that investment. So some of the questions we've been asking for users are on page 3 of the paper. These are pretty specific questions, but I think generally we're just trying to figure out, first of all, you know, if you agree with the project, if there should be an exception to consolidation for investment entities, and if fair value measurement really is resulting in more relevant information. Also, I would like to know if there's any entities that you think should qualify as investment entities. And then just generally, if you are in the process of analyzing an investment entity, how you analyze those entities and what information specifically you find most relevant. So, and then also if any of you have just general questions on the project too, I'd be happy to explain those.
There are some extreme views on this project. Some believe that you should never have fair value for something you control. So principle we have, if you control, then you consolidate. That should be applied across the board. So whether you're a venture capital company, a fund manager, a regular industrial company, you should always consolidate. Others take the view that there are two business models. There's a business model where you're managing a business and using your control to manage the activities of that business, and there's another business model which is you're just holding something for its investment potential, fair value gains, investment income. And then there's a middle path which is sort of a constrained business model, criteria, rules, and what have you, which is essentially what we have in the ED. So I guess we're interested in your views about whether you think which of those three approaches, what you think about the principle of having sometimes fair value information instead of full consolidation for these types of controlled investments. Applies sometimes to mutual funds. Most mutual funds, of course, are going to have minority stakes in other businesses. Occasionally, you might end up with a controlled stake. Happens more commonly for venture capital type entities, where you may more frequently end up with a large controlling stake. So it's sort of, there's different types of situations and then different philosophies around it.
I don't have any problem with the fact that you could value some of your investments as fair value. The one thing that I have a problem is how this standard could be used to deconsolidate some business in a normal company, i.e. I can structure a company that will be called investment company and then deconsolidate something that in a normal case, because of this investment company, would have been consolidated. That's my main question. Can it work this way? And I believe it will be used this way.
Take long to hit on one of the key issues, even though I didn't mention it.
And that's the question: is because are the 6 tests the right tests? Yeah. So I think if you've got the definition of investment entity right and sufficiently constrained, there shouldn't be any problem with having everything at fair value, and actually it's surviving consolidation as well, because you've got a series of fair value investments. I invest in investment entities, and their accounts are on fair value. I don't use their accounts because I get underlying reports for every single one of the investments that they've got within the fund, and I can check that the sum of those underlying investment fair values adds up to the fair value that I see in the accounts. And I've got to say, I wouldn't rely on the fair value without seeing the underlying data for the investments that underlie that fair value. That's relatively more straightforward because typically the entities that typically will only have 20 to 30 investments, so I get a pack that's, you know, 3 pages per underlying investment, so it doesn't go horribly long. But if it were, you know, an entity that had 1,000 small investments, you know, that would be a challenge.
But then you would be more happy with the fair value information than...
I don't know, I only use the fair value information, but the point is what I've got is I've got a listing of these are all the investments that are in the fund, and here's a load of financial data, this is what we think the fair value is, but I can actually look at it and say, oh, no, you're being a little bit aggressive there, maybe I can sort of second guess and be comfortable, and I know you know, the fair values are always a range of numbers.
Yeah.
Because you use lots of different assumptions, you can come up with lots of a range of forward numbers. They've got to obviously hit a mid somewhere in the middle, and I appreciate the fact that sometimes they're towards the bottom end of their fair value range with the number that they've picked because they're worried about the economic climate. Sometimes they're slightly towards the top end because they think some of the things that are pointing to the top end are more current, or maybe the industry's consolidating and they're seeing lots of transactions, and so they're putting more weight on the transactional type metrics. So I can see them moving around, but at least I can see what's there, and I can see all the variables, and I can get comfortable with the number they've used. If all I've got is a single number, it's worthless.
Mm-hmm. So if you were given the consolidated information instead, would you be any more or less likely to use that or the same?
I wouldn't use consolidated information. No, if I've got 30 different investments where one of them writes software, one of them's a steel mill, and one of them's a, it's garbage. Yeah.
But we are already admitting this kind of approach with fair value in the investment property things. It's exactly the same approach. I mean, the fact that you can fair value your property.
But at least with property, the range of fair values isn't quite as big.
Yeah. But you are accepting another business model where you control an asset and you care about the value, not the, let's say, the historical accounts.
I mean, it's slightly different with an investment property, because you will have the property itself on the balance sheet. It's a question of measurement.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, it's whether you have a single line item investment in company, or whether you consolidate all the individual assets and liabilities.
Steve, I think we may be thinking about two things. One is the basis of measurement, and the presentation.
Yeah.
So let's put the basis of measurement aside. Let's say we have a precise tool, we can measure everything in fair value, we don't argue about the measures, we do it. I think there's still an inherent issue about the basis of presentation. You can take a company that manufactures software, with a company that manufactures typewriters, the company that's a law firm and a hotel, and a couple other things, and I say gross income, expenses, and SG&A, and then you think about, does it help users at all in understanding the drivers of the income?
It will be segmented.
No, unless there is single play and it has some, cost of good means something, and then fixed asset means something because you can infer some ratios from the balance sheet. So if it doesn't help you, you got to think about, it's not an issue of consolidation. In my mind, it's more an issue of presentation, right? How do you want to present that information to the users? So if that's the case, my only intuitive answer, the only way you can get there is through some notion of consolidating statements, whether they be in disclosures or to show you what the drivers based on some segment notion of business that could lend themselves to some aggregation, if they are, and if not, then that's the only way users can ever infer anything from income statement. But if you don't go there, then you should, if you cannot go there, just mudding it all together and not provide any value, then I'm going to option B, and my option B would be just give me a single number, because then I'm just looking at a single number, which would be the most beneficial items for me as a return on investment as a single number.
And so let's suppose with option A, the consolidation, you get excellent segment information, and there's no problem with that. At what point do you flip going from option A to option B? At what point you say consolidation is no longer appropriate, even with all the segment disclosures, and what I really want is fair value?
No, I'm thinking that now you're introducing the basis of measurement, right? It's not fair value; it's a single line item. Because in my mind, even in the consolidating, you can decide that you want a consolidating basis using fair value, your CP driver, and ultimately the sum of the parts on the balance sheet will end to some fair value presentation. So you can get to some notion of fair value on a measurement basis, even if you decide to disaggregate, right? So the notion is what you're pointing towards, at what point there do you want a single line item and a single line item on the income statement, the measurement basis being what it is.
I don't think you can abstract away from the measurement basis, though, because there are quite a lot of assets and liabilities that can't be on a fair value basis.
Why they cannot? Look at pension
within the constraints of
standards. All pension funds in the U.S., whether they're all hotels and others, have been reporting on fair value. You could argue that it is not really fair value. They're making some assumptions and making some estimates, but they've done that. And they're getting close. They don't get precisely there.
No,
and there have been some arguments that theoretically you can mark to fair value. Fannie and Freddie Mac had the fair value disclosures.
But in terms of current standards,
in the footnotes, in the 5 years preceding the financial crisis.
But you could only do it.
This was a full balance sheet, full fair value balance sheet, and four, and the income statement. Look at, you know, some.
But Neri, in terms of current standards, if you consolidate, you are then saying that block of land in that investment entity, in that subsidiary in which we are investing, mm-hmm. that is now accounted for as our land.
Correct.
If you do fair value investment entity accounting, you implicitly fair value the investment that you are investing in and the land,
and you show it
and
as
you get the whole thing
item.
In as a single line item. Yeah.
That's my point.
So, but so that what you're suggesting is a sort of a long way down the track in terms of developing new accounting standards. So if we're working with where we are at the moment, we have essentially got a sort of a binary choice. Either we do consolidation and accept the suite of accounting standards that comes in with that, or we do investment entity accounting and we fair value and get single lines coming in. We don't have a third choice, which is what you're suggesting, which is fair value consolidation.
I got to think, what's my preference under those circumstances?
I'm tempted to say that that's kind of what you're suggesting is that the valuation methodology that you're using is impacting your choice. So whether the earnings information is used to value investment entities or whether the fair value is a driver of the valuation that's used by the investment community, that is then, but it's not a very well defined, what's going back to when you flip from one to the other. But I'm kind of tempted to make that an important part of discussion. Are you looking at it from a fair value perspective? Are you forecasting the earnings and applying a multiple?
Could I ask? I think the flip to me is would be that if it is a really an investment entity, a characteristic of an investment entity is that they buy and sell companies. Every now and then, that's part of there's an exit strategy. And the buying and selling of the companies makes comparison across the years very, very difficult. And if there's a business hanging above it, it would actually distort more than it would add value to fully consolidate it, even with proper business segments. So the flip for me is when M&A is so active that year-on-year comparison is becoming very difficult, and that's a hard flip. And I think earlier already you can say it's justified to apply fair value, and you get something in return. Okay, you do fair value, but like the SEC requires, is the list of investments would be a very natural disclosure item for me to look at, and that can be a little bit more elaborate than just the amount of shares owned and the domicile of the company. I think that could be a little bit more elaborate, because abuse is the real danger. I think you have to be really wary to create for 200 companies a nice, appropriate set of rules and open for 20,000 companies the opportunity to cook the books.
Which is where I think Jed's point is important, that the criteria that are set in order to determine what is an investment company and therefore what sort of company can have this special form of accounting, that's absolutely crucial, because if you get those sort of boundary conditions right, then you should find that you haven't got 20,000 companies abusing it, and that the companies in the grey area, and it'd be interesting to try and explore a little bit, you know, which companies might sit on the boundary. But one would hope that the boundary would be very thin, there'd be very few companies sitting on, and the way that they sort of pushed on one side of the boundary or the other was broadly satisfactory. So I think those criteria are key.
Steve, where were the borderline cases? Because you responded to Jacques about the deconsolidation. Where were the problem areas? Why did that come up?
When does a venture capital company turn into a holding company? So is it frequency of sales? I mean, a conglomerate buys and sells businesses. Would we want that situation to then end up in fair value? But then you have a venture capital company where all of their investments, bar one, are minority stakes of different types, but I happen to have 60% of one company. Do we then have all of it at fair value and then the one company consolidated? Now, that's sort of easy, but what if it's sort of half they control and half they don't? And what if the frequency that they're sort of buying to develop these businesses and maybe some have a longer term horizon than others? You can see maybe that border becomes quite wide.
It's
quite difficult to determine what goes where.
But if you start at the other side of the transaction, if you were looking at a conglomerate, what you wouldn't see, I don't think, is the conglomerate going out to investors and sort of specifically marketing the next stage of fundraising in order to then go and do things. Whereas if you look at any sort of investment venture capital type entity, you will see them regularly getting together a PowerPoint pack, flying around the world and begging for money from pension funds and etc., saying we need to raise X many billion and then we're going to spend it on these sorts of things and then we'll give you your money back in 5 years' time. This is the strategy for doing that. So I think that's the key difference, it seems to me, is actually sort of behavioral business model, if you like, but it's the underlying purpose that what are they trying to do.
But I think the venture capitals, most of them, they are doing on a fair value basis. Do I think they do a fair value basis, actually? I mean, you have the cost basis, whatever you pay for investment, and every year you do your fair valuation of your investment, because actually that's what it is, an investment company. And at the end of the year, whenever at the end of the investment period, the fund you sell, you do whatever, but you do regularly on a fair value basis. And I can tell you as a user is how I like to see it. Because on a consolidated basis, it's not going to tell me really the value of what I have. And the purpose of an investment company is exactly to invest to get some returns. Otherwise, you know, you do on a yearly basis, you don't know how your returns are going.
I think,
I see the conglomerate point, that's a little bit different story. I see what you mean.
Although three board members dissented to the original ED thinking everything should be consolidated if you control, that the majority of the board agrees with sort of Peter's assessment that in that sort of situation, fair value for the minority stakes and a fair value for a majority stake in another company makes sense as well.
I agree.
The concern is the structuring and the ability for a regular commercial company to stick one of its loss-making subsidiaries, an R&D subsidiary maybe, into some structure. Say that's an investment entity, you roll it up and then not consolidate what perhaps should be consolidated. The other concern is in the banking industry, all SPEs are inserted into an investment entity and we end up with all the SPEs off balance sheet and all the leverage hidden in the consolidated accounts.
No, that's my fear.
So the last one can maybe be evaded by saying if you guarantee any of the subsidiaries of the investment entity, we are not allowed to apply investment.
But they do. They do guarantee. Most of private equities don't provide guarantees to.
No.
Oh, absolutely. You buy companies to work out situation. What you do is you buy a company, it's a separate company, you provide them operating guarantees, you can guarantee their lines of credits. There's a bunch of other things that's happening all the time. I know it's an NSP, it's an easy route, but in the, you know, in the private equity firms, you see those guarantees.
To do what?
The guarantee. The private equity firms acquires a company. It's a very large private equity firms. They have working capital on it. It's a workout situation. They have some trouble. The private equity firm will provide some guarantees. They provide them some loans. They provide them some assistance. It's not uncommon.
Okay. If I would really be wary for indeed the hidden debt situation.
Yeah, but
either you put up the capital then as an investment, as if you want as a private equity firm. Want to apply accounting, you have to put up the capital and not provide a guarantee.
But all the companies guarantee subsidiaries obligations across every single dimension.
The boundary issue is an interesting one because I was at a Cruft Canada meeting and one of the very strong participants actually works for a bank, and that particular group said they were just so terrified of the special purpose entity buried in a investment entity underneath a bank that they just said, you know, if the top entity is not an investment entity, then nothing, then you can't you have to consolidate normally. So that basically the question was, and that was a specific structuring example, so that forbid, if you're an operating company, you cannot keep the investment entity counting and roll it up. You have to roll it up as a consolidation. The other school of thought is that with a better definition of what really these funds are, you might be able to allow that to happen. Most people I've heard are so terrified of the gaming that they are prepared to, in essence, throw out some legitimate cases where the it is an investment entity. It really is, and it does happen to belong to an operating company. And that it is what it's supposed to be, but they're so afraid of the gaming that they says, for those tough, you can't use the rule, it's out, because they're afraid of the gaming. And I think that the boundary issue is a lot harder. The boundary issue is hard because there are a lot of things in there that flip back and forth. The venture capital. My understanding is there's a Canadian company where the users think they should be an investment company and the company thinks they shouldn't be, or it's vice versa. I'm not sure which one it is. So there are a lot of boundary issues here.
I would think it's a simple definition issue, right? I'll go back to my earlier comment. I think, or to help me think about it, I'm convinced, Steve, to your point, that fair value would be the right value, and then ultimately you need to provide information to the users to understand the drivers of income and expenses. So when do you want to provide some sort of consolidating income or something? If it's operating company, you can understand what the driver of fair value, that could be a disclosure issue. So I'm with fair value, single line. Now, then you go to the boundaries. So the way maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but I'm thinking under those circumstances, the way to think about it is the company's business activities would be to buy and sell entities. That's their inventory. They're buying and selling companies. And if in that context, in their purchase companies that they're buying and selling, they are engaging in activities that are facilitating or benefiting, or not benefiting, facilitating core activities of either the holding company or the bank, then they should be subject to general consolidation rules. Then it's not an inventory to buy and sell, but rather they're engaged in activities that support, comport, facilitate, whatever it is, of the owner company. Then you pierce the rules and you say you got consolidated. I'm sure there's some crafting languages here, but I would not actually jump immediately to support of any obligations. You can support obligations, but I would look at the core activities that you engage in conjunction with some very simple minded approach to it. If it's inventory, then account for it as an investment company.
Yeah, Neri, we do have two criteria right now that address a lot of those concerns. There's the nature of investment activities criteria that basically say that the only activities an investment entity can engage in are investing, that you wouldn't be able to get any of those external benefits from your investees. So it would really just be investing for capital appreciation or interest income. And then the second would be its business purpose that, as I think Peter was talking about, it kind of markets itself as an investment company, that it goes out, this is what it says its business purpose is. But there are a couple of other criteria that I wanted to discuss, and Dennis, this kind of relates to your point. Some of the other ways that we've kind of tried to draw the boundary is to focus on how the entity is structured. So there's a criteria, unit of ownership criteria, that basically the ownership of the investment entity, its investors all own units of that investment entity, and that there would have to be multiple investors that would invest in that entity, and the entity would have to have multiple investments. And so that the multiple investors and the multiple investments requirements are something that we've kind of been hearing some criticism on too, because that would, you know, address kind of some of the structuring concerns with a bank or an operating company just creating this investment entity subsidiary and putting all of its loss making investments in there. So, you know, you would say that there would have to be multiple investors, but a lot of people are saying, well, things like sovereign wealth funds that should qualify, or pension funds that should qualify, or kind of parallel funds that are set up side by side but each have one investor that should qualify. Those would all kind of, you know, run into problems with the multiple investor criteria. So would, do you have any thoughts about that, if that is kind of an appropriate way to go, to focus on how the investment entity is structured, or should it be more kind of as we were talking about the business purpose and the activities that the entity would engage in?
I think I would say like more like the business purpose of the entity. I mean, there are many conglomerates right now that they have investment entities within them. I mean, Convention General Electric has a very specific company. The only thing that they does is investments. So, I mean, and there's only one investor there, really. So, and you can find many of those companies right now. So I wouldn't go, I think there are the two types that you are mentioning, but I don't think I would define investment company only based on the multi-investor approach that you're mentioning. I think I would be more on the business purpose of the entity. And definitely I would go for fair values anyway.
What Sarah's just saying is also linked in with the roll-up issue, which is the third question.
Oh, okay.
And whether you have a single investor, whether you then roll up the use of fair value to the parent, that single investor parent of the investment entity.
The fair value of the value of the investment company, not the value of the investments of that investment company.
That's right. So
G capital be one line.
Because then will be one line of fair value would be the value of that investment company, not the different investments of that company. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you have an investment company that has different investments. Those different investments, there will be fair value, and then you will get the value of that investment company. It will be the sum of all those values.
Well, it will be the individual investments which then get into the parent. But if that investment entity subsidiary itself has a subsidiary which it fair values, then that fair value survives the consolidation up to the ultimate parent.
So, indeed, as Jane said, GE Capital is a one-line item at fair value. Is that then the consequence?
Or that's GE Capital, for instance, is a good example. The sake of the conversation, okay?
If GE has an investment entity subsidiary, and that investment entity has various investments,
right,
including controlled investments,
right,
yeah, all of those investments are at fair value, then you consolidate the investment entity subsidiary, and that fair value information goes up to the top. It's not the fair value of the investment entity itself.
No.
What do you mean by fair value goes
sort of pass through accounting?
Pass through is
transparent.
It survives consolidation.
Well, no, your ED it doesn't, and the FASB it does.
That's right.
Yeah, and I think that
the FASB one it does.
The question really here is, I think, is that investment company really an investment company, or is it a sham? And if it's a sham, it shouldn't. And if it's an investment company, it probably should. That is exactly the right term. If it is a sham, it shouldn't. And the question is, I think the more relevant question is, can we define an investment company sufficiently well so that the sham does not survive, is pierced, and to allow the legitimate ones to flow up? And what I've heard from some of my colleagues is some people think it may be theoretically possible, but some people also, and what I've been hearing is there's some people are just so terrified of the gaming that they're just saying forget it. You know, those ones have the GE example where it might actually be a legitimate investment company should just not survive. I think if I can put a personal comment in, I don't think we currently have enough fences around the definition of what an investment company is now to be able to allow a non-investment company to consolidate an investment company. That's my impression of the situation.
Is there something that you would recommend adding in another fence or another?
The problem with single investor,
mm-hmm,
is that you also swept out pensions. And I think most pensions really are investment entities, even if they do belong to somebody. So that doesn't help. I've got a bunch of things that don't work. Guarantee doesn't work. Investment doesn't work. Active management for a while doesn't work. I'm sorry, I don't have a bright answer for that one.
But there is a good active management for a private equity fund. There's what? Different levels of
investment. Yeah, no, they're the conglomerate. I thought there was actually some interesting. The interesting comment, I think, it was Peter talking about conglomerates. An investment company will go out and the first chart they're going to say is, this is the fair value of our investments last year and this is the fair value of our investments this year. The conglomerate will go out and they'll talk about earnings per share and they'll talk about revenue. And so that those really are two very different beasts.
And conglomerates are not buying and selling enterprises for buying and selling. They manage a portfolio enterprise for generating, of operating, manufacturing, servicing income, and occasionally they will rebalance the portfolio buying and selling. It's different than having inventory in companies and buying companies with a very defined and explicit exit strategy. We come in, we have a defined, some of them may have a very clear defined term. They have money for 5 years. This is impatient money. They got to return the money within 5 years. That's their inventory. They're buying, it's the same thing as buying and selling tomatoes.
If there
is the same concept. It's your inventory. Now, how you define it in accounting, well, that's a different issue. Now, anti-abuse rule, I can definitely see that, but there's always the definition with respect to moving it to a joint venture with a call option on the joint venture. Now people can play gaming. We can sit here and try to close every single loophole, and then in doing it, we're going to put everything on the balance sheet, and then we're all going to complain to the balance sheet. I can tell you, there has been a rule in the U.S. with some tainting of investments. If you sold some things out of investments, you got to put it on the balance sheet. So then it's not, you're using accounting as the penalty box, and it's not the right answer. I think the right answer should be first think about how accounting should depict what we want to see in accounting. And then think about what we can do in accounting to minimize the abuse. But if you think that the abuse could be really so significant that everybody needs to put everything and on the balance sheet to mask everything that we can get out of it, I just don't buy it. I think we need to address the abuse using some other means.
Shame we can't rely on auditors to apply professional judgment and indicate whether the accounts are true and fair. Because that's what you're talking about, is are we looking for substance over form? And I quite like Neri's example, where if you've got the ultimate parent is doing stuff that is very similar to one of the controlled investee entity, either in some sort of, because they've got similar activities, then I think the likelihood is it shouldn't survive consolidation. So if I had an investment in an investment entity that was that had a controlling stake in another asset management business, I've got to tell you, and I had a lot of influence over that investment entity, I would think I ought to consolidate that underlying asset manager, because it's even if there are Chinese walls and things that are stopping me talking to them, it's basically the same thing that I'm doing. I control it ultimately. It shouldn't survive. And ultimately, and the likelihood is that the reason I've got it is probably because I ultimately want to take it over. So you probably say that should survive. That shouldn't, the fair value accounting shouldn't survive consolidation. But in most circumstances where you're doing, where you've just got investments in completely disconnected stuff, and it's, even if you end up with a controlling stake, your intent is always to sell it, and you're always monitoring it. I monitor it quarter to quarter on fair value.
And I would add to Blair's earlier point, if you have assets or obligations on this that are likely to remain within the ownership group when the subsidiary is to be sold or the investment is to be sold, there's likely an indication that the subsidiary either need to be consolidated or considered strongly for consolidation. Then you know that there's some elements there that are facilitating the activities of the broader group. So how you go through some principles that are outlining it by way of examples of what you're trying to achieve under broad principle would be better. It's an attempt. And then, if people are just totally abusing it, then come back and think about how you can improve the standard. So I would just not venture to say that at the beginning you need to consolidate everything just because of the potential abuse. Because I think you're going to get the other argument that what you produce is irrelevant, people do not understand it, and it doesn't produce the Well, it's just that people don't abuse it, so that's great.
How did FASB get happy enough with their tests to accept roll-up?
One of the differences nationally versus internationally is having a legal definition of an investment entity. Because in most jurisdictions, there is some sort of legal regulatory definition that you can point to.
Now, there is an exception to that rule, and that is Canada has no legal entity. They have investment entity accounting, and they have a sort of a definition of investment entity, and there has been, I wasn't going to say no abuse, but it has not been problematic in Canada. But the comes in is that we've shut down a bunch of other things that people can play with, so that I'm a little worried that, in fact, what the Canadians are saying, after you've shut down a lot of the games, they're afraid that banks will move into investment entity accounting as the next gaming strategy. So it hasn't been a problem in Canada, but a significant number of users are concerned that as other loopholes have been closed to game, that this is going to be the next hunting ground.
Well, why have the banks not gamed it so far? Or could they theoretically have gamed it?
Well, they actually may. It's very hard to get the exact fact pattern. I think there actually are potentially some investment entities underneath the banks already. But they have been, you know, they've been using securitization as their big gaming vehicle. Okay, well, now that you're hopefully shutting that one down, they're going, where's the next place they're going to do this? So that's the thinking, and that is actually the thought process. They, you know, we've shut down securitization. The special accounting for special purpose entities is the Canadian version of that is gone because it's IFRS. That's the concern among the Canadian users. This is the new hunting ground, and that's why they're coming out so strongly about. They don't trust the Canadian users. Don't trust Canadian banks. It's an interesting comment.
Because it seems to me that I don't know whether this example really exists in practice, but you know, if you were a German company with a classic sort of book reserve pension system where you don't have a separate trust fund. You've just got the liability. But a lot of German companies traditionally have had quite high levels of marketable securities and things like that. It would be perfectly within the bounds of possibility for the CEO, say to the Treasury Department, you know, go out and just buy an equity portfolio, venture capital or whatever. And you do that under this ISB proposal at the moment, because you now control that portfolio and potentially there are entities within that, which you have more than 50%, suddenly German manufacturing company is consolidating a lot of Paraguayan telecom stocks or whatever. Now, you know, maybe they wouldn't be material, but it seems to me just a little bit odd.
Because right now, what would happen? Right now, would they be showing fair value, or would they be consolidating?
Well, now they'd consolidate. At the moment, they'd consolidate.
Okay, so
we're not. What this rule is doing is potentially opening up a bit of IFRS to say here's an alternative way of doing it. My view is that the ISB has gone halfway down the track. I would like to see them go all the way down the track. So I would like to see a FASB-style roll-up option allowed. So in my scenario, the German company, if it's got this investment, would not fully consolidate the Paraguayan telecoms company as a revenue line, but would keep it as an investment, even though it's fully controlled. In exactly the same way as if it was a US or UK or Dutch company, and it had a separate pension trust fund, which had bought the venture capital, it would then be accounted for as a fair value pension.
So if the business really is separate, so we can imagine some German manufacturing company that has a portfolio of financial instruments, we could argue that that's completely different. Where that fence breaks down is if you have a bank and has an investment entity. That investment entity will always be sort of in the same line of business.
Well, isn't that the point that Jed was making?
Pardon? That's not the case most of the time. The bank has an investment company, and that investment company has a wide variety of investments. It's not just only to invest in other financial services companies. I mean, then it would be a different issue. It's not a purpose, wouldn't be investment company. It would be a different purpose. But I think banks, when they have those investment companies for different, I mean, it's just to buy and sell. And that's not the most of the case right now, but that used to be.
But the concern that I have this concern that in the case of a bank, that the temptation to shove something into the investment company that shouldn't be there. But by the way, this rule really is applying to something you control. If you have a whole bunch of little investments, it wouldn't matter. It's really, we're talking about an investment you control. Mm-hmm. If a bank controls something, if a bank investment company controls something, that's making me nervous. And maybe I'm just a nervous sort of person. But that one, I don't mind, by the way, if the German manufacturing ends up holding a control of a Peruvian telecom because they managed it, that just happened in their equity portfolio within an investment entity, that one doesn't bother me. It's the bank I don't trust, and specifically the Canadian banks I don't trust.
So maybe there's a seventh criteria in it. You're a Canadian bank. Can't do roll-up accounting. Everybody else can, but.
Maybe the criteria is that if you are a financial institution, you can't do this. Because the investment entity is in one way or another in the financial markets anyway. That if you are a financial institution,
like GE, you mean?
GE Capital is a financial institution.
Of course, we don't have a definition,
you don't have a definition of a financial institution.
I think that the legal definition is very important. That's really what is the.
You're right. If the thing you're consolidating has underlying investments in financial instruments, then you don't want it to survive. But you could argue that with a financial institution, if you ended up with, do you want a bank to end up with revenue from telecoms consolidating as one of their top lines?
What I'm really afraid of is bank control investment entity controls another investment that is held at fair value and has a colossal balance sheet. That's the one that scares up. And
that's underlying financial instruments, assets and liabilities.
Yeah.
That's the one that's scaring.
Because you're capturing the thin equity slice instead of the grossed up balance sheet.
And it only I don't care if this is a portfolio manager, whether it's a pension fund or if it's a guy sitting in a German industrial and it's really a fund, and he ends up with a thinly capitalized investment. Now, lots of people buy thinly capitalized investments. It should be captured in the fair value. There's a risk associated with that. That's okay. I'm afraid of is in the bank structure, now I've got a way of going out and getting my traders to have a huge, they don't even have to buy Canadian banks stuff, but another example that is, think of Enron, not the fact that they lied, but just think about what Enron would do with this is we wouldn't want Enron's investment entity to be anywhere near the oil and gas business for the same reason. It's the thinly capitalized.
So it seems to me that the question is, at the moment the ISP's got a position, as far as I can see, which is basically roll-up is not allowed. So, you know, if you're an investment entity, you do investment entity accounting. If you're not an investment entity, then you cannot do investment entity accounting. And if you buy an investment entity, that investment entity accounting disappears because you are not Topco, you're not an investment entity. Hang on a second. So that's the ISP's position. That's a very hard, clear rule which will prevent a lot of structuring. Seems to me the alternative, which I would like, but I can see it's more difficult, is to say roll-up is allowed except for certain circumstances. So essentially you expand the boundary conditions, or you make them more granular, rather than saying here's a binary, you can, you can't. You say, well, you can accept. That's what I would.
And would you be happy if that sort of kind of worked, but there may be some wriggle room in there? I mean, can we
I would, because you have, at the end of the day, you have to accept that that sort of solution, you have to accept that there are going to be one or two loopholes, and occasionally you'll find somebody who takes a coach and horses and tries to get through
the loopholes. Or a whole new industry is created?
Might be a whole new industry, but, it depends. I mean, there are job cuts going on if there's a new job opening. But no, I mean, seriously, you have to accept with that sort of solution that there will be issues with it. Yeah. Clear, bright lines give you clear, bright solutions
and
simplicity, but it's a case of whether you're throwing a baby out of the bathwater, whether the baby is valuable.
If we wanted to go down that route, and I hate to use the D word, but one way you could clear this problem up is that if you are you're an operating company rolling up an investment company. We might be able to deal with that because the question is always how much disclosure do you need and how much additional disclosure do you need with what would ultimately be given. But if you did the right disclosure in that particular subset, so it's a self-imposed.
Well, okay, two problems. If you did the right disclosure, you could see the gaming. The other thing that this particular standard is, it's forcing the situation. It's not giving you the option. So what we would be saying is, if you happen to be an operating company and you chose to own an investment entity, you would be forced into a suite of additional disclosures that would be above and beyond the normal fair value risk type disclosures that would be out there.
Well, I'm going to move us on, spend a fair bit of time on this. Sarah?
No, it definitely was.
I think we're clearly going to investigate what Peter's been saying. We're going to look at the whole definition issue. We will look at single investor and single investment. We'll look at the roll-up. Whether we can achieve that to our satisfaction and adopt more of a business model approach, I'm not so sure, but we're certainly going to investigate it. That's what a lot of the feedback has said, that we should be more business model, principle based, less concerned about abuse. But then, I guess, again, we are concerned about abuse. So these are the issues that we're going to have to look at.
And just to add, I know we just touched on this at the end, but disclosures is also something that I wanted to talk with all of you about. But I think given kind of the timing of re-deliberations and when the next CMAC meeting will be, there will still be time in June to ask you about disclosures, and hopefully at that time we'll have a lot more of the decisions that Steve was talking about the definition and the roll-up and everything, and we can kind of...
And maybe once we've got a bit further forward, we could communicate with these guys via email and just send them some of the things that we've been deciding upon and just get their reaction.
Yeah, on disclosures, an interesting example would be the Carlyle prospectus. Mm-hmm. You're worried about sham conglomerates.
Okay, point noted.
Yeah.